Welcome to the Animal Voices Show here on 100.5 FM Co-op Radio CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, August the 22nd, 2014. I am your host, Allison Cole, and I am joined here today by my co-host, Jackie McIntosh.
Hello.
And, oh, I don't think your mic's working.
Hello.
yeah, I think you might have to go to another mic, Jackie. And our guest co-host, Darren Chang.
Hello.
Your mic is definitely working. Alyssa and Janie are away today. Thanks for joining us, Darren. It's really nice to have you here. Animal Voices is Western Canada's only radio program dedicated to animal advocacy and compassionate living, broadcasting live every Friday from noon till 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and bringing you interviews, commentary, news, and events that you need to keep up to date on what's happening both locally and abroad. In addition to our live broadcast here on 100.5 FM and at cooperadio.org, our shows are also available as podcasts on iTunes and at animalvoices.org after airing. Our first interview is with lawyer and animal advocate Sophie Gaillard. She works in the Animal Advocacy Department of the Montreal SPCA, and this year was instrumental in writing a manifesto called Animals Are Not Things, in which she, the Montreal SPCA, and over 46,000 other citizens are calling for a change in the Civil Code of Quebec, which currently classifies animals as simply property under the Quebecois laws and doesn't recognize them for the sentient beings that they are. She'll be here today to speak to us about why Quebec has been named the best place to abuse an animal and what changes will be taking place there in the future. Then for our feature interview, we have nutritionist and animal advocate Gina Hemshaw with us from the popular vegan food blog Choosing Raw. She has recently written a book by the same name and will be speaking with us today about making the connections between diet and animal compassion, as well as giving us tips and advice on how and why to incorporate more raw foods into your diet. That interview is coming up in about 32 minutes, so please do stay tuned. But to start, Jackie, you and Carissa and Darren and some other animal activists in Vancouver spent part of your weekend last week at the Pacific National Exhibition here in Vancouver, which openly celebrates the exploitation of animals year after year. Please do tell us about that.
Yeah, so we didn't go in there to celebrate the PNE, actually. We went in there with the motive of disrupting the Agri Fair, which is where it's also a holding area for 4-H Festival, which is where children are basically taught from a young age how to raise animals. It's also other aspects of agriculture, but primarily, obviously, the big part is the animals. And so they had a lot of cows there being shown, a lot of pigs, goats, and sheep, I believe, and also dogs even.
Rabbits, too.
Rabbits, yeah. The dogs, I don't believe, were being slaughtered, but all the other animals, obviously, were going to be sold for slaughter. So it's quite an interesting way to desensitize the children to the love that they're feeling for these animals. There's often been at these 4-H festivals, kids walking in with their prized cow in tears, crying. So we were there to kind of remind them that that is a normal reaction, and to desensitize yourself to that love and compassion that you're feeling for these animals is actually abnormal. So we walked in there with a large banner that said human liberation, animal liberation. And just basically did a speak out over the megaphone. Elmira did that, and it was amazing. One of the lines that really stuck with me was when she addressed the four H's in 4-H, and she basically said, let's change the meaning of 4-H. Head, to think critically about the status quo. Heart, to show compassion for all beings. Hands, to liberate those who are being oppressed. And health, for the health of all beings on the planet. So I thought that was really powerful. Darren, what did you think of the demo?
I actually was, before we all went into the holding area for the animals and before the disruption was about to begin, I was actually a little bit worried because I knew that most of the crowd there are people from the agriculture industry or the agriculture community, and I thought there would be a lot more hostility towards us. But I guess once the disruption and the demonstration actually started, completely changed my mind when I saw people's reaction, because I think what happened was it got to a point where nobody wanted to look bad. So I guess the industry people realize, you know, they're representing the industry, and the PNE security realize, you know, this is like their first day, you know, opening up for, I guess, the towards the end of the summer. And yeah, nobody wanted to look bad, so it was quite smooth.
So they basically let you do whatever you wanted because they were too scared to get in trouble. Is that what you're saying? Because I saw the pictures online. I haven't seen the video yet, but I was wondering, like, how long did it take until they escorted you out? Because I saw one picture, but you told me, like, they kept trying, but they were unsuccessful. Yeah. Like, they're security. That's their job.
Well, they don't know the laws, it seemed.
Right. They weren't prepared.
They were trying to take the megaphone away from Almira at one point, and she's like, you can't do that, and they just gave up. They're like, okay. And then they tried to grab the banner from me, and they tried to say we were on private property, which, you know, we paid for tickets, so it wasn't like we were trespassing.
Right,
we were allowed to be there. Eventually, though, we did end up leaving, because we walked in a parade route, and there was I think this was kind of set up by them in some way, because it was, the timing was just too perfect, but there was bagpipes coming along kind of along our path, so we just ended up
went in them with the bagpipes.
Well, we were escorted out. I'll admit
you should have paraded with your banner.
I know, I was thinking about that afterwards. I'm like, I'm sure we could have stayed there longer because we weren't actually breaking laws. But yeah, it was really powerful. And we were also, I also want to mention that Safeway is a huge sponsor of this event. They were definitely, there were signs everywhere saying Safeway, like over all the animals that were there. There was pigs, a mother pig with her babies. There was cows and calves, and there was a little bit older pigs, 6 months old, just all in cages along the walls there. And Safeway is a big sponsor, but they're not addressing at all what these animals are being raised for, which is interesting. They're trying to, it's like people were there and they were obviously thinking, oh, these animals are so cute, and like building an attachment, especially the children. But the parents are not at all bringing that up. So,
well, people take their kids there to enjoy the animals, like sort of like you would going to a farm sanctuary, like, oh, look at the cute baby piglets who have just been born. Let's hold a baby chick. It's so weird and ironic, and it's just every year we talk about this issue, and it just like kind of drives me crazy. I think next year it doesn't have to be next year, it can be in the near future, we should really bring this on for a further discussion. But thank you for that, Jackie and Darren. And I think this was the very first demo of this kind that had happened at the PNE, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, awesome. I believe so.
It was
okay.
Awesome.
Well, thank you so much.
Soapbox Radio. Soapbox Radio provides an on-air platform for Canadians with disabilities, as well as their families and those who advocate for them. We want our guests to use this platform, or soapbox, to provide advice to others. We would like to educate our listeners that people with disabilities can and do accomplish many great things.
Soapbox Radio.
We feature many exciting topics and shine the spotlight on a vast array of interesting and intriguing guests. Soapbox Radio never fails to keep you entertained and educated.
Soapbox Radio.
Join your hosts, Hazel Lorraine and Carmen Liana, each alternate Wednesday at 1 o'clock p.m. on 100.5 FM Vancouver Co-op Radio.
Soapbox Radio.
You are listening to Animal Voices here on 100.5 FM CFRO in the unceded Coast Salish territories, otherwise known as Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
All right. Thanks, Jackie. So now we're going to update you on some events that are coming up in the next week or two. Tomorrow, Saturday the 23rd, Liberation's Chicken Vigil will continue from 12 p.m. to 2 p.m. outside the Hallmark Chicken Slaughterhouse on the northeast corner of Commercial and East Hastings. The chicken vigils have been moved from Friday mornings to Saturdays until further notice. And this is a regular Liberation BC outreach event where activists will wear signs and wave to the traffic and basically raise awareness and consciousness about the suffering of the chickens inside the slaughterhouse where we stand. And on Sunday, Sunday is the next demonstration with Direct Action Everywhere, Vancouver Coast Salish Territories. The information and details for this event are unfortunately only available on Facebook right now. So if you're interested in attending, search for the event One Voice United for Animal Liberation on Facebook for more details. There is an ongoing regular event happening every Monday at 7 p.m. at the Vancouver Art Gallery called Vancouver for Peace. This is an open mic event for anyone interested in speaking to promote peace and nonviolence in any context or topics. So feel free to stop by the art gallery and you should see, usually there is kind of a small crowd of people around, like some speakers and a microphone, and just sign up and you'll get a chance hopefully to do a speech.
I've not heard of that. That sounds like an amazing event for animal liberationists to attend and speak about the issues related to that.
Is that giving you ideas, Jackie? Because you made some pretty good speeches in the past.
Maybe.
You can take that
we'll
there.
Yeah. I definitely think in terms of animal liberation and promoting nonviolence against non-human animals, we should get our voices more, I guess, into the social justice scene and social justice movements, because so far it appears that the animal rights movement, animal liberation movement, has been more isolated and we're not so part of the social justice movement. On August 26th is the National Dog Day, a day to celebrate and honor all dogs on this planet. In spirit of that, we're in that spirit, we're promoting the documentary Dog Dazed, created by two-time Oscar nominee Cordell Barker. So according to the film description, 84 million dogs are now sharing public spaces with human beings across this continent, and conflicts over canines are breaking out all over urban North America. Dog Dazed discusses the social and environmental impact of dogs, celebrates our love affair with canines, and encourages a new relationship that values the environment and the neighbors as much as the dog. This documentary is viewable for free online. Just search Dog Dazed CBC to find the website.
Well, thank you so much for that, Darren. That's all the time we have. And today's first interview is with Sophie Gaillard. She is the lawyer and campaigns manager of the Animal Advocacy Department of the Montreal SPCA. And she is here today to speak with us about a manifesto that she has co-written entitled Animals Are Not Things. This declaration calls for a reconsideration of animals' legal status in the Civil Code of the Province of Quebec, where it is asking for animals to be regarded as the sentient beings that they are, rather than objects or property. Bonjour, Sophie, and welcome to the Animal Voices radio show.
Thank you.
Well, I've just recently learned about the Animals Are Not Things manifesto and was really intrigued by it for a couple of reasons that we'll get into. This is a declaration for Quebec, and can you tell us why you found a need to write and put forth this manifesto specifically for the province of Quebec? What are the standards like for animal protection now in Quebec as compared to other provinces or even other parts of the world?
Okay, well, the reason behind the manifesto, the reason that pushed us to move forward with this project, is that currently the Quebec Civil Code divides the universe into two fundamental categories. On the one hand, we have persons, and on the other hand, we have property. And animals are classified as property. They're movable property, just like toasters or chairs. So there's no distinction that's made between animals on the one hand and inanimate objects on the other. And yeah, like you pointed out, Quebec fares very badly in comparison with other provinces in terms of our animal protection legislation, and also in comparison with other countries. So the Animal Legal Defense Fund, which is an American organization, comes out every year with a ranking and classifies determining which provinces are the best in terms of animal protection and which are the worst. And for a number of years, Quebec has systematically been at the bottom of the list when it comes to animal protection. There are a couple of problems in our provincial legislation here. For example, there's no possibility of jail time under our provincial law for people who abuse animals. Wild animals in captivity and exotic animals are not covered by our provincial legislation. So there are a number of really important flaws in our current legislation in Quebec.
Well, with these flaws, what kind of abuses have you seen or have you heard of take place in Quebec? I'm curious if you can give some examples. Quebec has been called the best place to abuse animals. So if I were an animal abuser, you know, if I was crazy enough to do that, with knowing that there would be no repercussions, what kinds of things are happening in Quebec that you might not see in other places?
Well, one really good example that just recently came out that some of your listeners might have heard about is a fur farm in Quebec that was recently exposed as being the setting for horrendous acts of animal cruelty and neglect. And unfortunately, our provincial animal protection legislation does not include wildlife held in captivity. So those animals are not protected at all under our provincial animal protection legislation. So that's a pretty good example of the kinds of flaws that we have here in this province.
In your opinion, why do you think there is this apathy in Quebecois law towards animals? Where do you think this stems from?
That's a really good question. I don't really have an answer for it, actually, but what I can tell you is that things certainly seem to be changing here in Quebec. Mm-hmm. In the last couple of years, citizens are increasingly concerned about animal welfare and how we treat animals in this province. So I think, luckily, things are changing today for animals in Quebec.
What information forms the basis of the manifesto, and can you summarize the wording and the message of it, please?
Yeah, so the manifesto is basically a straightforward one-page statement that expresses our dissatisfaction with the fact that animals are considered movable property under Quebec civil law. And basically, what the manifesto says is that there's a huge disconnect between, on the one hand, how the law perceives animals, which is as the same way as an inanimate object, and on the other hand, how Quebec citizens today in 2014 perceive animals, and also a huge disconnect between how the law treats animals and what we know about animals scientifically now. We know that at least all vertebrates are capable of feeling pain, and research is revealing that animals are increasingly capable of complex emotional and cognitive abilities. So the law really needs to catch up with people's mentalities and also with the state of scientific knowledge today. And the goal of the manifesto was really to raise this issue and launch the debate in Quebec society.
And can you tell me what animals this manifesto is meant to represent? Is it just for dogs and cats, or does it extend to all animals, including wildlife and farmed animals?
Yes, certainly the goal is to include all animals that are capable of feeling pain. So certainly all vertebrates, so mammals, birds, and fish.
And who has signed it so far? I understand I've signed it. There's over 46,000 signatures. Who has signed it and who can sign it?
Right. So as you mentioned, over 46,000 signatures so far since when it was launched in January. When it was first released, we had a number of prominent Quebec celebrities that had signed on to it also. Anyone can sign. It's not only for Quebec citizens, so certainly your listeners are welcome to go and sign it on our website, animalsarenotobjects.ca.
It's pretty cool, too, because when you do sign it, you can see who else has signed it. I guess you could scroll through all 46,000 mm-hmm. if you wanted to, but I noticed that there was me from BC, there was a lot of people from Quebec, and there were some people from New York on just that one page that I looked at. So,
okay, yeah.
Yeah. So I know there are other similar projects and campaigns around the world which call for a recognition of animal sentience and personhood, even such as the Non-Human Rights Project, who we've had on the show before. Can you tell us about some of these and how they compare to the Animals Are Not Things campaign?
Right. Well, the Non-Human Rights Project is a really interesting project that's sort of in the same vein as the Animals Are Not Things manifesto. It's a project headed by an American lawyer, Stephen Wise, and he's basically asking that New York state courts recognize the legal personhood of chimpanzees for the purposes of granting them certain rights, namely habeas corpus. So he's going one step further and actually looking for the granting of legal personhood to animals, certain animals, in this case chimpanzees. So it's slightly different, but he is pursuing, the goal is also to change animals' legal status. And though it seems maybe a little bit crazy to want to consider certain animals as legal persons, we have to remember that legal persons aren't only human beings. For example, corporations are considered legal persons. So it's not completely unfathomable to imagine that we could one day extend personhood also to animals, since we already do it for corporations, for example.
We should at the least do it for animals, I think, if we're doing it for corporations, which are non-human entity or non-beings, really, non-breathing beings.
Yeah.
Exactly. You can't argue with that. So as a very recent development, just this month, it has been announced that there is a new legislation in the works that will redefine the status of an animal in the province's civil code and improve his or her protection. Can you please tell us about that?
Yes, so we were very pleased, as you can imagine, myself and the other co-authors of the manifesto, to hear that the new Minister of Agriculture in Quebec has made this one of his priorities, and he's actually working on a bill to amend animals' legal status. However, we don't yet know what nature this new legal status will have. Will it be simply a symbolic change where animals are defined as sentient beings, but we still apply all the same laws pertaining to property to them, in which case it's mostly a symbolic change, or will it be something more progressive where animals get a change in status, but also certain rights associated with that change? So that's yet to be seen. But certainly it's very exciting news.
Yeah, this, like I said, this is just in the past few weeks. I read an article about it last night that you actually had sent me. And what it said was that Quebec, now Minister of Agriculture, Pierre Paradis, he was saying that they are following in line with Europe and recent changes that France has made. And do you think that maybe this manifesto has had some influences as well? Like, what are your feelings as to why they're doing this?
I certainly think the manifesto has had an impact and has shown, you know, to be perfectly honest, when we launched the manifesto, we weren't expecting to have so many signatures and for it to become so popular, but it really seems to be indicating that Quebec society is ready to change and move forward on this issue. And also a number of organizations have come forward in favor of the manifesto. For example, relatively recently, the Professional Order for Veterinarians, the Ordre des Médecins Vétérinaires du Québec, came forward in support of a change in legal status for animals. So certainly, the manifesto, I think, has had a lot to do with this.
Another interesting comment that Pierre Paradis made was that he said it's as much of a commercial decision as a humanitarian one. And he said that competitors could squeeze Quebec out of the market if it doesn't treat its animals better due to the agreement that, I guess, Quebec has with Europe in buying animals, and Europe has higher animal standards. What's that all about?
Yes, well, that's a kind of a separate issue with the World Trade Organization and international law and international commerce. But certainly I think what his point was is that, you know, increasingly as citizens and people here in Quebec and elsewhere become more preoccupied with animal welfare, the how we treat animals is going to be shaped by this consumer demand for more animal-friendly products. So I think certainly from an economical point of view, it's important. Animal welfare is going to become more and more important.
So what has the feedback been like among the province? This has been in the media a lot, I know, in Quebec, since you introduced this manifesto in January. So like I mentioned earlier, you have over 46,000 signatures right now. So what kind of reaction or interest or debate has it sparked in Quebec so far?
Well, we've seen, we've received a lot of emails from people who signed the manifesto from all over the province. It's been actually really interesting to see that it's not just people living in big cities that are concerned about this, but we've received a lot of emails from people living in rural and remote areas saying that they are also in support of this. And like I said, some big organizations like the Professional Order of Veterinarians have come forward in support of this issue. I think there's really things are changing in Quebec for animals, and it's very exciting.
Well, my next question was going to be, are the Quebecois people ready for this change in thought process towards animals? It seems like that's happening, perhaps as a result of this manifesto, perhaps mm-hmm. because they're looking at just all the information that's being put out there with regards to animals. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, I think we had a nice synchronicity in terms of the manifesto coming out, a number of stories in the media. I mentioned the fur farm recently, and a couple months ago there was a Mercy for Animals expose of a veal farm in Quebec that also shocked people here. So there's been, you know, these stories in the media that just reveal how horrific the situation for animals is in this province, and a combination of all that with the new government that's come into place and Minister Paradis, who has been very outspoken on this issue from when he was first appointed as Minister of Agriculture. So I think it's an interesting time right now.
For sure. I think that putting out this this manifesto and this declaration, you've made it very public. You've gotten lots of publicity. I think it's starting to get people to reexamine their preconceived notions about how animals are treated. So I applaud you for doing that. And just one final question, just how was this manifesto started? I know that you were one of the co-writers, and there were a couple of other people that helped write it, and it has the backing right. of the SPCA. But was it just a few of you who just decided we want to do this? Like, I'm just wondering, how can people be empowered?
Mm-hmm. Actually, we looked to France as an example. France, last fall, an animal protection organization over there launched a manifesto similar to ours, which demanded a revision of animals' legal status in the French Civil Code. It was signed by a number of prominent intellectuals in France. And, we basically used that as our inspiration. Myself, Élise Desaulniers, who's an author and a blogger specialized in animal ethics, and a philosopher, Martin Gilbert. We decided to basically try it out here and see what would happen. And we had the backing of the SPCA, as you mentioned. And yes, we were really happy with the response we got. And interestingly enough, in France, just in last April, they made the change to their civil code. So the manifesto over there ended up generating an actual change in the law. So we're excited that we might actually get the same thing to happen over here.
Well, Minister of Agriculture Pierre Paradis gave this quote. Gandhi said the evolution of a society can be judged in the way it treats its animals, and there's room for evolution here. So I think that's what's hopefully happening for Quebec. Thank you so much for being on the show with us today, Sophie, to tell us about the Animals Are Not Things manifesto. For more information on this campaign and to sign the manifesto yourself, please visit animalsarenotobjects.ca. Thanks so much, Sophie, and have a good day.
Thank you.
You are listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM CFRO Vancouver Co-op in the downtown Eastside, unceded Coast Salish Territories, British Columbia, Canada. And I have some news stories for you. Effective this coming October, New Zealand will see additional bans on the finning of sharks. Well, it was already illegal to fin live sharks. The additional measures will be enacted will also make it illegal to fin dead sharks and dump their carcasses at sea. It is estimated that more than 100 million sharks are killed due to commercial fishing every year, putting many species at risk. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's actually kind of surprising to me because I've always thought shark finning was a very specific industry on its own. And then I recently watched the documentary Cowspiracy and discovered that a lot of sharks are actually killed just from commercial fishing. So I guess the implication of that is, you know, like overfishing and shark deaths are very much related. We should be concerned about both.
Absolutely. And like there definitely needs to be more restrictions or hopefully an end to commercial fishing. But you know, people aren't as excited about that, unfortunately. In other news, a federal grand jury in the U.S. indicted four officials from a Northern California slaughterhouse for slaughtering cows with cancer while inspectors were taking breaks. Rancho Feeding Corp, based out of Petaluma, California, ceased operating in February following a number of recalls, including one for 8.7 million pounds of beef that was sold at Walmart and other big box stores, as well as used in such products as Hot Pockets and other things. Two co-owners of the slaughterhouse and two employees were charged with distributing adulterated, misbranded, and uninspected meat. Prosecutors accused the employees of slaughtering cows afflicted with skin cancer of the eye under instruction from the slaughterhouse's owners, then concealing the heads of the deceased cows by swapping them with those of healthy cows. Which is interesting.
Wow. Yeah, that's very disturbing. I mean, it's one of those moments where I'm really glad that I don't eat any animals at all. Mm-hmm. Although, I guess personally, I'm very much against criminalization. I think this kind of stuff is very much more of an industry-wide issue where, you know, animals are getting sick in factory farms all the time. Something needs to be changed about that.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, I like that at least that's been addressed, that it wasn't just the employees doing this on their own accord. They were getting instructed to do this by the slaughterhouse's owners. But yeah, I still agree. Criminalization is not really the solution to this problem. In much better news, Simpsons co-creator Sam Simon purchased a Southern California farm used to breed chinchillas to be used for fur earlier this week. Activist group PETA, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, helped broker the deal, which is said to have been a $50,000 payment to the farm's 90-year-old owner, Lurley Adams, on the condition that she sign a contract stating that the farm will never again be used for such purposes. Adams and her husband bought the farm and began breeding chinchillas in 1966, and she said that after the sale, that she only found out when the story broke that the firm would be shut down and the animals adopted out to loving homes. It was also reported that 59-year-old Simon, who was diagnosed with metastatic colorectal cancer in 2012, walked somewhat unsteadily and accompanied by a nurse through the facility's cramped rows of tiny mesh wire cages on Tuesdays, telling the chinchillas, "This is your last day of abuse. This is your first day of freedom." All 420 chinchillas have now been taken to the Oceanside and San Diego branches of the Humane Society, where they await their forever homes in much larger cages, or hopefully some homes where they will not have cages. Simon is also helping cover the cost of caring for the rescued animals, having made an additional donation of $100,000 to the Humane Society. Simon also rescued an Indian elephant named Sunder, who was shackled, beaten, and starved by his handler at a temple in India this past June, and also paid for the rescue and relocation of 17 bears from deplorable concrete pits in the state of Georgia. "I have a desire to help animals," Simon said. "The question of whether it makes financial sense, it's my money and I get to do what I want with it." And he phrases that, "It's an expensive hobby I picked up at the end of my life."
You know, some really rich people pick up expensive hobbies by, say, buying like 50 sports cars, right? Don't you think this is a much better expensive hobby to pick up by just buying all these animals that he can rescue?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm really glad there's some really wealthy and powerful, compassionate people out there who are doing great things for animals.
Mm-hmm. He's a true philanthropist, and I would actually really love to have Sam Simon on the show because he does his own radio show, too. So if he's listening, please
there you go, Sam
please
Simon.
Contact us.
Yeah,
he's just amazing.
Yeah, I thought this rescue is great. Of course, like, I do have some concerns, like 420 chinchillas, that's a lot of chinchillas to try to find homes for.
Where are they all going to go?
I hope that the media will help them find loving homes, hopefully where people really understand them and are giving them the freedom that they deserve.
For sure. At least we know their lives are going to be spared now. Thank you so much for the news. Our feature interview today is with blogger, author, and vegan nutritionist Gina Hemshaw. You may know her from her popular blog, Choosing Raw, and now she has just written a book called Choosing Raw, Making Raw Foods Part of the Way You Eat. Today, she is here with us to speak about the vegan lifestyle and nutrition and incorporating more raw foods into one's diet. Hello, Gina, and welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show.
Thank you so much for having me today.
Yeah, well, to start, I'd like you to share with us your journey on what led you to your path to veganism. I know you have quite an interesting story to tell.
Yes, it's a very interesting story, and it's not there's nothing simple about it. So I went vegan for health reasons. I had a history of GI illness and a history of disordered eating, and it had left me feeling pretty rotten in my early 20s, which is when I started to get curious about living a healthier, more wholesome life. And I finally found a GI doctor after seeing many doctors who kind of didn't know what to tell me about diet, who suggested that I cut out dairy. And it made a really big difference really quickly in my diet. You know, I'm not technically lactose intolerant, but it was just one of those things that as soon as I cut it out, I felt better. So at that point, I had stopped eating red meat as a kid. I saw Bambi when I was about 8, and I just decided that day that meat was not something I was interested in. And I ate, I would say, pretty little chicken or fish. I had sort of winnowed that down after college, and I didn't really care for eggs. So after cutting out dairy, I recognized that it would be pretty easy to make the switch over to vegan without it feeling like too drastic of a change in my diet. So I decided to just dive into it and do it. And I can't say I really philosophically had connected with veganism yet, but I kind of had the sense that it was probably the right thing to do. And then it had been about a year or two, maybe a year and a half or 2 years into my vegan journey, a friend of mine asked if I wanted to go volunteer with her at the Woodstock Farm Animal Sanctuary for a weekend. It was their Thanksgiving event, and they needed volunteers. So I said, sure. And I went up there, and it was a really transformative experience. You know, I grew up in New York City. I didn't have much exposure to farm animals. And so I think it was really easy for me to distance myself emotionally from farm animals the way so many people do. And that weekend, I really kind of had a chance to connect with these creatures and stare into their eyes and recognize that they were every bit as sentient as I was. And it just had a profound impact on me. So pretty much that weekend was the start of my life as someone who identifies as an animal rights vegan. And so today, when I talk about my veganism to people, I always say, I went vegan for my health, but I've stayed vegan for the animal.
And in your book, you say that early in your vegan years, you made an almost conscious decision not to identify yourself with veganism from an ethical standpoint. Can you tell us why that was?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's almost that I kind of knew on a subconscious level anyway that it was the right thing to do, but I didn't want to hold myself to that standard. I think it was fear of failure in some ways. It was also just fear of being my best self. I know this is a ridiculous, ridiculous comparison, but, you know, I think it's the way some folks, they want to commit to any kind of lifestyle change, you know, whether that's quitting smoking or cleaning up their diets or whatever, and they kind of fear going there because I think they recognize that once they start to experience what it's like to feel healthier or whatnot, it'll be impossible to go back. And I kind of had that feeling, you know, I sensed that it was kind of right on some level. But I recognized that the more I opened myself up to it and the more I learned, the harder it would be for me to ignore. And then I would be in a position of needing to really stick to the values that I had come to respect. And that was scary to me in whatever way. And I think that over time I came to see how silly that was. And I came to say to myself, well, you know, you're not afraid of holding yourself to high standards in any other way, you know, and you're not afraid of being your best self when it comes to your work, your relationships, your friendships. So why in this one arena where you have the capacity to make more compassionate choices and you have the capacity to do good, would you shy away from it because you're afraid of, you know, you're afraid of what kind of standard that will set in your life? And so I really just dove into it.
I think those words will really help people, other people who can identify with those sentiments. I personally actually have a new friend who is saying, too, that he doesn't... I gave him a book to read, Farm Sanctuary by Jean Bauer, saying, oh, it's a beautiful book. He loves animals. And I gave it to him 2 weeks ago. He won't open it because he says he's too scared, because then you'll have to change. And he knows it's coming, but he's scared. So I'm going to get him to listen to this. And I think your words will hopefully empower him. So in the book, you say that you're, until your visit to Woodstock Sanctuary, you had been keeping your heart blocked off to a kind of awareness that would ultimately enrich your experience of being vegan. I really love that sentiment, because I really feel that it's so true that once we do open our hearts to the plight of animals, it's like a flooded gateway to becoming more aware and compassionate for all other creatures on the planet, including human beings. Can you talk about how the opening of this blockage has enriched your experience of being vegan?
Yeah, I love that sentiment that you just said. You know, it's so funny because I'm sure you've heard this too. Sometimes people will say, like, well, what about people? Like, don't you feel bad for people when you say that you're vegan and that you want to protect animals? Yeah, like everyone hears that. And what I always want to say is, you know, it's not an either or. Like, being vegan has only widened my circle of compassion, and it's not a finite amount. My compassion is not limited. It's not as if I choose to care about animals and their plight, I suddenly have limited ability to care about human beings who are suffering throughout the world, you know, or about other issues of social justice, whether that's, you know, women's rights or whatever. You know, I mean, I think consciousness simply begets more consciousness, and the circle keeps getting broader. I find that I am a kinder, more gentle, more understanding person since I went vegan. You know, I think a lot of that coincides with just growing up. I went vegan in my, you know, sort of early mid-20s, and I, like a lot of young people, I think when I went vegan, I had a tendency to see the world in very black and white terms and always think I was right. And I would say that in the time since I've become vegan, I've developed a much more understanding worldview. I think I've become much better at putting myself in other people's shoes. And I think part of that is just what happens as we get older. But I really think a lot of it is also becoming vegan. I think that it trains you to be more compassionate, and developing and cultivating compassion is what allows you to put yourself in the position of another living being and think about where the other living being is coming from. And I think that can only be toward the good. I think it can only be, you know, a beautiful thing. And I think I've become also just much more aware of sort of social justice issues since I went vegan. You know, becoming enlightened about the food system really opens your eyes. I think it teaches you that we all accept systems and ways of being that are not necessarily right. And I think it's just made me much more thoughtful about what I choose to support in the world and kind of how I want to show up.
That was so beautifully said. And with that, we're going to transition to talking about your new book, Choosing Raw. Can you tell us how it is structured? Rather than just being a recipe book, it offers a lot more than that.
Yeah, you know, I very consciously didn't want this to just be a cookbook. I mean, of course, I wanted to share wonderful food, and I am a foodie through and through, and I believe that the best way to make veganism feel appealing to everyone is to show them how delicious it is. So the food was important to me. But I also really wanted this to feel like a resource. You know, I wanted to give people who don't know much about veganism a very sound, credible source of really good information so that they can make the choice to adopt a vegan diet in a very educated, safe, responsible way and take care of their bodies. And then I also wanted to offer, you know, long-time or short-term vegans a resource that would help to give them that same kind of credible information and maybe clear up some of the confusion and the myths and the misconceptions that surround vegan diets. You know, unfortunately, the nutrition world on the whole is full of a lot of misinformation. And as much as I wish I could say that there's no misinformation floating out there about vegan diets, that's not the case. There's plenty of conflicting stuff on the internet, and I think vegans are just as susceptible to confusion about how they should be eating as everybody else. And I really wanted to give folks a sort of a good primer in vegan nutrition. And at the same time as all this, I wanted to tell my story too. You know, as I said, I have a colorful, long road, a long story that took me to veganism, and I have a very complicated history with food, and I think that that kind of has enriched my perspective about food and nutrition, and I wanted to share that with people.
And I have to say, I think that really does help people to hear other people's stories, to know that we are sort of all in it together. You're not isolated on your journey to adopting a vegan lifestyle, that everyone has a, you know, a journey that they take that might be a bit different than yours, but we can all find similarities and a common path there. So I thank you for sharing that story in your book. Now, I'd like to talk about your take on leading a raw vegan lifestyle, which is quite a sub-movement among just the regular vegan lifestyle as a whole. Rather than strictly adhering to a 100% raw vegan diet, you advocate for just incorporating many raw foods into one's diet along with the cooked foods. Why is that?
So I think I'll go ahead and call it three reasons. The first is just from a sheer clinical nutritionist perspective, my perspective as someone who's a health professional, I think that it is a healthier, more well-rounded diet to not eat 100% raw. I think you can do it, and I certainly know raw foodists who sustain either 100% or close to 100% raw diets, and good on them. That's awesome. If you feel great, then that's, you know, the proof is in the pudding, as they say. But I think from a perspective of someone who's just looking at what a well-rounded diet is, I think that cooked grains, cooked legumes, and some cooked vegetables provide a lot of nutrient density, especially if you're really sticking to a 100% plant-based diet. And I think they're very important foods. And I think when you eliminate them, you can run the risk of eating a diet that is too limited. Same for soy foods, you know, tofu and tempeh. Of course, you might argue some raw foodists eat sprouted grains and legumes, and that's true, but most raw foodists I know don't eat too many of those foods, and I personally find them very hard to digest. I find cooked foods, cooked grains and legumes much easier to digest, and that makes sense because a lot of the enzyme inhibitors have been broken down through the cooking. So, you know, sheer nutrition facts, I think that you will get more nutrient density if you include some cooked food, including those important groups of foods in your diet. I think there's also a practicality element. You know, as you know, it is very easy at this point in time to eat out and socialize as a vegan. It was not necessarily this easy a couple years ago, but it has become very accessible for most folks to find options on restaurant menus, to travel, to go out with their friends. If you're eating 100% raw, though, it starts to become really tricky. And I experienced this when I got into raw food because I was a book editor and I had to do a lot of work lunches. And it was just, you know, I kind of got tired of being the person who had to sit around looking at restaurant menus and trying to cobble together 8 appetizer salads in order to feel full. It was just impractical. And it made my lifestyle also seem really, I think, really inaccessible to other people, which as a vegan activist, I didn't like. So I think it's just a lot more practical to combine raw and cooked food. If you love raw food, you can definitely eat it at home. But, you know, don't hold yourself to an impossible standard that will curtail your lifestyle freedom. And then I think the third reason is just in my own experience, I feel my best when I focus on raw foods because I love the kind of freshness of them. But I feel grounded and a little more solid when I enjoy some cooked food, too.
Well, you do call yourself a raw foods enthusiast, and I'd like to know more about how you do feel when you eat more raw foods. You've mentioned more energy and feeling more inspired.
Yeah, you know, I think part of it is just like my infatuation with raw cuisine. It's just so creative and so innovative. When I'm making a lot of raw food, I just feel so connected to my food. And I think that's also partly because you're really working with the bare materials of food when you eat raw. It's really just you and these very unadulterated ingredients. And I find that a kind of really interesting way to connect with food. And I do love the freshness, the hydration, the crunch, the color of raw food. It's so visually appealing. So for me, raw food dishes really put me in touch with my food and make me admire it in ways that really nothing else does. And I do often feel very energetic when I'm eating a lot of raw. But with all that said, you know, I also feel grounded and I feel very nourished when I eat my whole grains and my beans and my baked sweet potatoes and my vegan casseroles and all that. So I think a healthy balance is incredibly important.
Well, there's the whole raw food movement that if you're really getting into the really complicated recipes, you're dehydrating crackers for days, or you're buying really expensive ingredients. I know you like to keep it simple. So what are some tips you can offer for steps towards eating more raw foods?
Well, so keeping it simple is my tip number one. It is the tip that matters more than any other tip. Yeah. You know, you can buy your first raw cookbook, and there are going to be recipes that literally take days to make because of soaking and sprouting and dehydrating and all this stuff. Go ahead and make them. It can be a really fun culinary experiment, but this is not something that is sustainable day in and day out. And if you try to make recipes like that all the time, you're totally going to burn out and get bored of raw food really quickly. So what I always tell people is stick to the stuff that's easy to eat raw. Salads, slaws, blended soups, smoothies. These are recipes that are incredibly easy to prepare and really, really, really delicious. And they're things that are particularly easy to make raw. If you want something like a quiche or a pizza, don't necessarily spend all that time fiddling with a dehydrator. Just make some cooked quiche or pizza. I think this is where adhering to the 100% raw label just gets people in trouble and makes life overly complicated. So all the stuff that's easy to eat raw, like vegetable side dishes and big salads, make it raw. Salad dressing, stuff like that. And then when you're really craving a piece of bread, rather than investing in a really expensive appliance and then spending a day dehydrating bread, just have a slice of sprouted green toast.
So what are the templates, as you call them, that you rely on the most when making raw food at home? I think you're kind of the same as me. I'm a smoothie and salad type of person. What about you?
I love smoothies and salads. Salads more than smoothies. Unlike a lot of raw foods enthusiasts, I don't love drinking my meals, so I don't actually do too many smoothies, although I think they're great, especially if people like them. I do like blended soups, like just, you know, carrot, avocado, stuff like that. I love vegetable rice, so I like making it with cauliflower, with parsnip, and with jicama. All of those are wonderful bases for raw rice, so to speak. And I love making zucchini noodles too. So I use zucchini for my noodles. I think it's great. I've also made noodles with carrots and with beets and with rutabaga and with turnips. All of them make wonderful veggie noodles. So I like those. I like doing stacks. I'll make sort of a nut pate with sunflower seeds or almonds or something like that. And then I'll stack it in between layers of, say, heirloom tomato or maybe some lightly cooked eggplant or zucchini, making a little kind of vegetable Napoleon. Those are some of the templates that I would say I reinvent at home a lot.
And I think all of those that you just mentioned are in your book, but maybe you could just identify maybe just some of your favorite recipes in the book that you would just like to put a shout out for our listeners about.
Oh, totally. Well, speaking of zucchini noodles, I have this zucchini noodle dish with avocado, mango, and black bean salsa that I'm kind of obsessed with, especially because it's just so good right now at this time of year when it's still warm out. I have a Mediterranean cauliflower rice with a smoky red pepper sauce. That's a lovely raw entree, and it's got lots of flavors. It's got currants, and it's got spices, and there's just a lot going on. It's really bold and flavorful in spite of the fact that it's very simple. So those are two of my favorite sort of raw entrees in the book. And then there are a bunch of cooked dishes I love, too. There's a quinoa risotto with pumpkin that's wonderful. There is an enchilada dish that I've made for countless friends and family, and it's always a total hit. There's a quinoa breakfast porridge. And then just there's a lot of really simple stuff in the book that I love. You know, there are a couple of salad dressings. There's a green herb dressing that's wonderful. There are some chia puddings, a basic chia pudding, a mango chia pudding that's great, and a couple of smoothies that I really, really like too. So it really runs the gamut, I think, of very basic stuff and then a couple of crowd pleasers, and I was happy with how it turned out.
Well, your book has a whole chapter entitled Myths and Misconceptions about Raw and Vegan Diets, and I'm sure there's a lot of them that you could address right now, but we only have 1 minute, so I'm going to ask you about one of them, just because a friend of mine who's recently gone vegan said, oh, but I can't eat soy. You know, it's bad for my hormones. I'll get man boobs. There's that myth about...
Let's talk about that one.
Yes,
I
soy.
I heard the same thing. I was with someone who was like, well, I don't drink soy milk. And I was like, well, why? And she's like, because soy is bad for you. So, yeah, not so. Soy is actually one of the most nutrient-dense, healthful foods on the planet. It's associated with lower rates of chronic heart disease, and it's actually associated with a reduced risk of breast cancer. But there's a lot of misinformation, and a lot of that misinformation has been spread around by groups that have an anti-vegan posture. And it's really too bad. There are a very small number of studies that shed some complicated light on, you know, particular kinds of soy isolates and breast cancer. But the huge vast majority of evidence we have suggests that soy has a protective effect against breast cancer. And people also have to realize that the phytoestrogens in soy are not exactly like estrogen. It's not like taking an estrogen replacement pill. It's not like taking a hormone pill. They're very, very mild estrogenic, meaning estrogen-like compounds in plant foods. Don't work the same way, and that, from what we can tell, have all beneficial effects. And I think what people also have to realize is that those phytoestrogens, they're also in flax meal. They're in a ton of different foods. So it's not like soy is some special class of foods, and it's the only estrogenic food out there. You know, it's true of a lot of different foods. And soy has a lot of really great benefits and a lot of really good research behind it. So it's a thumbs up as far as I'm concerned.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show with us today, Gina, to talk about the vegan lifestyle and your new book, Choosing Raw, Making Raw Foods Part of the Way You Eat. You can find out more about the book and Gina's work at choosingraw.com. Thanks so much, Gina, and have a good day.
It was my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM, CFRO, Co-op Radio in Vancouver, downtown Eastside, also known as the unceded Coast Salish Territories in Canada. Please join us on our next show on Friday, August 29th. I'm not exactly sure what we have planned for that day, but I'm sure it's going to be amazing. We here at Animal Voices want to connect with you online, animalvoices.org. You can check that website out to stream shows from our archive, download as podcasts, read our show blog with detailed links, subscribe to iTunes, and learn about upcoming events, and just connect with the Animal Voices team. And stay in touch with us via our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, and join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. And please send us any suggestions or comments about the show, either on Facebook or email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. We're closing today with a song called Be Healthy by Dead Prez. And stay tuned for Radio Eco Shock with Alex Smith. Thank you for listening to Animal Voices, and remember to be kind to the animals.
It's all love, all love. Sweets, only ripe vegetables, fresh fruit and whole wheat. I'm from the old school, my household smell like soul food, bruh. Curry falafel, barbecue tofu, no fish though, no candy bars, no cigarettes, only ganja, fresh squeezed juice from oranges. Exercising daily to stay healthy, and I rarely drink water out the tap cause it's filthy.
Lentil soup is mental fruit, and ginger root is good for the youths. Fresh vegetable with them Italian stew. Sweet yam fries with the green hallelujah. Careful how you season and prepare your foods, cause you don't wanna lose vitamins and minerals, and that's the jewel. Life brings life, it's valuable. So I eat what comes from the ground, it's natural. Let your food be your medicine, no accelerant. Strictly herb generates from the sun, cause I got melanin and drink water. 8 glasses a day, cause that's what they say.
They say you are what you eat, so I strive to eat healthy. My goal in life is not to be rich or wealthy, cause true wealth comes from good health and wise ways. We gotta start taking better care of ourselves. They say you are what you eat, so I strive to eat healthy. My goal in life is not to be rich or wealthy, cause true wealth comes from good health and wise ways. We gotta start taking better care of ourselves. Be healthy, y'all.